This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On today's episode, I speak with Lauren K. Wattell about her book of poems, Book of Potions. Potions, part poem, part fiction. There are 75 potions in this book of potions. So what are they, these genre-bending vignettes? When you go in to read them, you'll fall right in, and it really won't matter what you call them. But let's call them potions. Prose poems, narratives that move with speed and urgency, with candor and metaphor. The speaker most times is a woman navigating the things that come in the middle of life. She isn't young, but she isn't old. She's in between, in the middle, a prisoner of stereotypes and expectations and social norms that don't make any sense at all in the middle years, a time when most of us have figured things out, are happy with where we are in life. We question, we opine, we reject, because we want to live out the rest of our lives in ways that matter and that are no longer controlled by expectation and projections of what we're supposed to be at this stage of life. Sometimes our speaker, our narrator, our protagonist is exasperated. Sometimes she's lost in something she finds beautiful and clever, and readers will go along with her from potion to potion. A spell is cast. We move through fables and scenes, satire and pure insight. The potions are small bombs that explode some fearsome thing, but then next, the potions are like a salve that comes to us, like books do, when we need them the most. I spoke to author Lauren K. Wattell about her book of poems, Book of Potions. But first, here she is reading one potion titled No Introduction Needed.
No introduction needed. No introduction needed. Just state my name. Well, if you insist on a few words, say I'm middle-aged, which you can see for yourself. My hair, my skin, a map of experiments. And as I accomplished very little over a half century of wandering these sidewalks, you can skip my accomplishments and say that I'm tough and mean. Say that I'm harsh, to put the audience at ease, and that as a girl I learned riflery and archery and gymnastics in nature, so I could survive in the wilderness for a day, maybe two. Say that I'm disapproving and critical, qualities I came by honestly, which you'd discover if you met my mother. And susceptible to gloom, to a relentless yet useless self-scrutiny, which often devolves to dour universalizing, which often devolves to a downturning spiral of bleakness from which diminishing chance of escape. Qualities I also came by honestly, which you'd discover if you met my father, which you won't, because he died years ago in our back driveway, where he installed a basketball hoop one summer. This was after the playhouse and the trampoline and the fort and the bicycle built for two and the mopeds and all the tools rusting on their shelves in the garage. And don't forget the tape and the glue.
Book of Potions. Tell me about this book. What do you say when people ask you to describe Book of Potions?
I say it is a document of my inner life during a time of great turmoil for myself and also for the country, because some of it was written during the last administration of the current president. So it was a time of great personal anxiety and also a time of great national anxiety. And the pieces themselves are a very strange amalgam of poetry and fiction, which is why I came up with this term called potions, which is sort of poems plus fictions. They are blocks of prose with a kind of poetic sensibility. How's that?
That is a great answer. And I was, I've been thinking, how come nobody ever thought of this poem and fiction potion?
I thought the same thing.
Isn't it great that there are?
I mean, it was out there to be found. I couldn't believe I was the one who found it.
I love it. I think it's so perfect. And
thank you.
And I wonder how you, I know you're a fiction writer, And I wonder how you felt about this sort of leaning into poems, their potions, their fiction, but their poetry. How did you feel about leaning into this other genre?
Well, to be perfectly honest, none of this was intentional. The book came about because during the time I mentioned, which is a very tough time for me, I gave myself an assignment, which was to write very fast, one page in a notebook the moment I woke up. It was an exercise, kind of like stretching before you run. I thought if I did that first thing in the morning before I even got out of bed, that I would indicate to myself, hey, you're a writer. And then I would write later in the day, because at that time I was afraid I wouldn't write at all. And so I wrote these things as a sort of writing warm-up. I didn't intend for them to be anything other than that. I didn't read them. I didn't think about them. They were in this notebook. And when I discovered that I was fine, I was going to be writing, and at the time I was writing a novel, I put that notebook away. I never read it nor considered it anything. And I only found it, I think, 3 to 4 years later when I was looking for something in my desk. And I was reading it for the first time out of curiosity more than anything else, and discovered that my desperate scribblings had yielded some of the strangest, most hilarious, intense, even scary writing I'd ever done in my life without my having intended it or knowing it. And so it's hard to answer the question of leaning into poetry because I didn't purposely do that. I think what had happened was I'd been reading a lot of poetry and I maybe had it in my bones there and it came out in this way, but it wasn't something I meant to do.
I love this idea of getting up to write in the morning, first of all. I love this idea because there is something about that time, that period of time when you first wake up. I've heard other writers talk about this and how this works for them. But then the other part of it was to do that writing and then to put it away for years and then come back to it and discover that there's been something there all along, that it was there, but that maybe you encountered it again, having come through something terrible, intense, and frustrating and infuriating, and we're still standing, and you can look back at that and see it as something, a composite whole of all of those different days, of all of those different documents, of all of those different things that you wrote. And how did you know? Did it take some convincing? How did you know, wow, this could be a book?
Well, first of all, I would highly recommend this to anyone, honestly, whether or not you're a writer. I would recommend trying to write with what I might call urgent unintention, meaning write without a plan, but write what you're most urgently feeling. And you will end up with some part of yourself, as you so eloquently described. When I encountered this writing, I knew immediately it had a quality. I was fascinated by it and was laughing at some of the crazed, intense rage, but it also scared me. I didn't understand some of it, what it said about myself, and that made me nervous. And I thought, this is compelling, but is it good? I had never written this way, and it yielded some strangeness I didn't quite recognize in myself. But I knew almost immediately that I could have something. And so I started typing out some of the better ones and sitting with them. And I had a friend, my best friend Lewis, who encouraged me to let them be weird and not to over edit or edit out the strangeness, but to let what I had discovered about myself sit there and be as strange and uncomfortable as it ended up being.
Well, the strangeness and, you know, what's uncomfortable, I think, is what is so resonant. This is why we read. I mean, sometimes that's the motivation for me, is to be able to read something and sort of see myself on the page and have reference points and recognize something about humanity or relationships or childhood. And, you know, the idea of strangeness and rage and anger and frustration and also humor and beauty, I think those are very difficult things sometimes to share, even the beautiful things. If we think of these as fictions to a certain extent, but there's always so much truth in fiction. I just feel like a reader can dive into each of these 75 pieces and not be thinking, is this a true story? Did this really happen? Or any of that, and just take it as a work of literature and say, this is why we read. And I have to tell you, all of the moments, these moments where I would read a line and say, my gosh, Lauren K. Wattell has read my mind. I mean, there's stuff that is so resonant. So if you think it's strange, or I don't know if you feel self-conscious about some of the things that are shared here, but they're fiction, but I feel like saying to you, yes, but like really great fiction, they reach an audience. The ideas resonate. This is another reason that I read. I feel so much less alone. It's something beautiful. So I suppose you reconcile yourself with this idea that you have to keep the strangeness, as your friend said, and it can be something very beautiful.
Thank you. I agree. And I think any writer or any just passionate reader of serious literature, or maybe just any reader at all, will tell you that the reason reading is satisfying and joyous and comforting, even when it's uncomfortable, is because you will often find something someone says, whether it's in a novel or a poem or an essay, that you recognize, because we all have our inner turmoil and we're very different in many ways, but in that way, we're extremely alike. It's stressful to be alive. It's stressful to adapt to change. It's stressful to be in relationship with other people. It's stressful to have awareness of what's happening all over the world with no power to change or affect those extremely stressful phenomena. And so when we can find that companionship in the words of other people, it is affirming that we're not alone in our torment. And I think it's why I wanted to write, because other writers gave voice to things that I had felt, and I felt less alone, as you said. And I thought it would be wonderful if I could give that to people who read my work. And I'd say it's an interesting issue to consider what you think is true about a work of fiction, or even a strange work of poetry and whatever, because there are things you can learn about me by reading this book, some factual things, but not many. So in that way, there are not sort of true accounts. But the reason is that I was grappling with feelings, or with, you know, emotional situations that I felt were very difficult. I was ashamed. I was afraid. I was angry, was resentful. And for whatever reason, the writing that came out of me in that time, it didn't literally describe those feelings. It didn't say, I'm so desperately sad. I'm so angry. Instead, it made almost like pictures, scenes, dialogues, fables, to bring that into language, all that feeling. And so while you don't necessarily learn about my life factually, you learn a lot about me. You learn a lot about my inner life by reading those pieces. You get a feeling for what I was struggling with, how I was feeling. And it might even be hard to articulate. But if you read and sort of give yourself over to the language, I think you come to know something about me extremely well. And so they are both not that revealing, and they are also extremely revealing. And for me as a writer, that is, I think, from that I have, that is what I have to give as a writer. I have that impulse. I have that need I have that need to expose myself in that way. I think it's the probably the best gift I have to give as a writer, is to say, I will, if you don't want to say it, I will say it. I am invisible. I am so angry. I'd like to push someone off a cliff. I don't know. Whatever it is that we all feel but are embarrassed to say, I'll go ahead and say. And I think that's what I have to give. And so I feel good about giving it.
Yeah, I can so see that. That's so profound. It's this idea of, well, this isn't a story about the author, but this is a story the author created so that we can understand human beings or feelings or ideas that rise up when you're frustrated or feel powerless or feel invisible, etc. And I feel like that's how this is a book of potions. That's how this really makes so much sense to me. I feel like I can understand you as the writer, but these potions you wrote them years ago, but they are meeting a moment for me right now, all these years after you wrote them. I think that's what really good literature does. It can meet a moment for the reader and mean something so profound and resonant and the rest. And that's what the book did for me too. I mean, there are recurring themes in the book, but one that I'm struck by and that has stayed with me is the idea of image, of aging, but also of ruminating on something relating to ways of disappearing or of a kind of displacement or dislocation. And I found very interesting the poems also about where the persona or the speaker is talking about getting older even, or about being invisible. I think where we are today in 2025, and I'm not saying this just because I'm older in 2025, but I feel like that something has shifted in our world around the idea of self-image for many different reasons that I won't get into. But the fact remains that I think people who enter some of these potions will find so much that resonates around the idea of feeling somehow less visible when we reach a certain stage. It seems to be concurrent with, and also because of our world and what is happening, feeling less, like we have less agency somehow instead of more because of what's happening in our world. So it's such an interesting thing. Your use of the word stress earlier, of what is stressful, and this is stressful, and this is also stressful. I mean, that is such a word that we all use and hear all the time. I feel sometimes like there's just not another word for it, for the things that we are feeling and thinking about. But I did want to circle back to the idea of self-image and invisibility and getting older, but not just getting older, because I love being older, but the idea that it can be problematic because of the way others treat the idea of being older, of somebody who is older. So I wonder if you can talk about that idea a little bit from your book.
Absolutely. I think it's a very good observation, and one I made about the work when I was looking at it, that I obviously was circling around forms of disappearance or being invisible or blurrings. And I think so many of us, especially women, you feel that you're too visible, perhaps, when you're young. You're kind of an object of the gaze of men, say, or just the gaze of anyone looking at you with desire or interest. and your I was at least very conscious of being that object and not feeling very comfortable as that object, but yet wanting to embody it. And then so much of my identity was based on looking a certain way, feeling like an object that was beautiful or desirable or youthful. And then you reach a point where suddenly you understand that if men were looking at you before, now you can walk through a room and no one is looking at you. And you're the same person, but you look different. You're older. And it's unsettling because suddenly you're questioning your value as a person. Even as you said, I'm feeling my value as a person much more powerfully the older I get. I'm just more calm. I'm smarter. I know myself a bit better, doing a lot of work on myself. It feels great to be in my late 50s. I'm happier now than I've ever been. But in terms of some kind of vibrant presence in the world, aging is counted out. And aging, I'd say, almost erases you, just as you're feeling more yourself. So it's extremely odd that way. And then there is the feeling of just erasure, disappearance, the panic of the vanishings because of climate change, that species are vanishing, that seasons are vanishing, that coastlines, that mountaintops, that snow are all vanishing. And we are helpless to stop it, and we are terrified of those vanishings and the vanishing of our own species, sort of a grim shadow, the possibility that we will not survive our own stupidity. And then, you know, in the current moment, I mean, instability and chaos seems to be the MO. So just the vanishing of normal life, it's all extremely unsettling. And again, stressful is the word. And then what happens? We just feel kind of a chronic anxiety because one of these things alone is enough to unsettle you. But there are 300 a day. It's a rough time to be alive. And lastly, I completely agree that our sense of our own agency, given our politics, given our ceaseless internet, etc., our news cycle, does seem to be diminishing. And so you are faced with just strange, calamitous, huge scale problems, and then very few opportunities for agency to feel in any control of these large scale changes that we are all watching just come over us.
I was thinking about the idea of potions. I was thinking about the idea of a potion as being, you know, something from a fable even, or from a fairy tale, right? This is like, where do we first encounter the idea of a potion when we're young readers, say? But I was thinking about how a potion can be medicinal. It doesn't have to be something that tastes terrible and makes you feel bad or makes you feel worse. It can be something quite the opposite. And I was thinking about this play on the word potion, and also just the idea of writing about stressful things and difficult things as being a kind of a, you know, the medicine that we would be afraid to take. We are afraid to ingest it, to look at it. And yet we know that to write it down, to read it, to encounter it, to accept it, to recognize it. I mean, all of these things that we do as writers or as readers ends up being something very positive. I really like this, the idea of potion, for so many different reasons. But I want to ask you about the cover of the book. I know that most times authors don't have a say on what the cover of their book ends up looking like. But I want to talk about the image of there's a knife. And I was thinking about this, but it doesn't have to be a negative denotation or connotation, perhaps. So I wonder if you can talk about the cover of your book, because it is so striking. And as I think about the idea of potions as being this sort of dual thing, I think about the knife in the same way.
Well, I enjoy that observation and think it's astute. And I love the cover. And I think it's very appropriate for the book. And I agree with you. I think the knife has many resonances. I like the threat that the knife embodies, as if violence is possible, but the knife is an extremely useful tool at the same time. The knife can help you cut things. And also, I like the knife as a kind of image of my tendency to cut through to the deeper, the darker things. I am a person who cannot help but be interested in why I do the inexplicable things I do, why I feel what I feel, which is just can be so difficult and mysterious. And I feel like the knife is the tool that can help you slice through, to probe, to get down to the meat of things, which is where it is maybe uncomfortable and we'd like to avoid, but it is the place where you can learn something. You can learn something about yourself. You can learn something about the world. You can learn something about how to live or how not to live. And so I think the knife, for all these reasons, is a very elegant and powerful cover image, and I'm grateful for it.
Well, tell me, how has your writing process changed, if at all, as a result of this book? Well, I imagine you write every day still, but in the morning in your notebook and just as before, but do you think about writing any differently now that you encountered that notebook and were able to then, and I'm sure it was laborious and time-consuming to create this book, but how do you now enter the writing space for yourself? Do you welcome the notebook? Do you approach writing in the notebook in a different way now?
Oh, I think discovering this writing completely changed everything for me, because first of all, it made me aware of how rigid I had been about what I considered a proper way to write. I had always thought this idea of writing quickly without stopping or censoring or even thinking was absurd and would yield just silly, sloppy, unusable nonsense. And I honestly had really never tried it and had been scornful of the idea. And it, I think, spoke to, a rigidity in myself. And very much my impulse to kind of control. I have always been a very bossy, controlling, disapproving, clenched person. And so doing the writing that way, I was sort of desperate. I didn't consider it anything. The fact that it yielded things and that taught me about myself was just a revelation in some ways. And so what I'd say is it just opened me up. It helped me unclench a little, both as a person and a writer. It made me less rigid and more flexible. It forced me to be more open to doing things in a variety of ways. And so I'd say it enlarged my writing practice, because I allowed myself to write any way that seemed, I let myself write in different ways, depending on what was called for, the assignment, or just if I went to Rome with my husband pre-pandemic, was tagging along on something he was doing. And I just decided to write for 4 weeks with no plan in this regard, something I never would have done. And again, it just yields some crazy stuff. Will I use it? I don't know, but it's just freeing. It's freeing to be surprised by yourself and let yourself be more and different than you've habitually been. And it's nice to find this out when you're older, that you don't necessarily have to harden into something. You can actually soften and expand into something as you age, which is exciting, in fact, and nice.
your good fortune of going back to those notebooks and then ending up with Book of Potions is our good fortune, I have to say. So, Lauren K. Wattel, thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the excellent questions and the very thoughtful and sensitive reading of my book. It's lovely. I appreciate it. Here we are. Do you trust me? Do I trust you? No, trust died last century, along with truth. So we'll have to think of something else to shake on. Not to our health. Our health is bad and only getting worse. Not to our wealth. Not to you and yours. Not to me and mine. Because yours and mine, every last one, perished in the wars. And without yours, there is no you. And without mine, there is no me. Just two bodies standing face to face. Two envelopes of flesh with nothing folded inside. How did we survive? And better yet, how did we emerge heroic after all that carnage, all that betrayal and heartbreak? Loss for every meal, loss before bedtime and on rising. That's why we're empty, because emptiness made us, made these bodies in which we stand, high on the hilltop, under a pallid moon, with the fields of bones surrounding us like a fresh snowfall, except that the heat here is insufferable. Last winter was years ago, before the battles broke out, remember? Here, let's shake on that. To winter, to cold, to snow, real snow.
Lauren K. Wattel is the author of Book of Potions. Book of Potions is the winner of the 2023 Catherine A. Morton Prize in Poetry, selected by Ilya Kaminsky. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Write to us at bookpublic@tpr.org. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.